Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. In honor of the holiday, I'm bringing you a double feature this week. Of course, it's St. Patrick's Day weekend. I hope you had a good run if you did the run for the pub, and I hope you had a good celebration however you chose to celebrate. Today's first episode of Desert Oracle Radio was produced by Ken Lane on March 15, 2024, and it's titled Spooky Tales for the St. Patrick's Storm. The second episode includes some things about St. Bridget and Ken's own St. Minerva, a woman who deserves admiration if you value the desert and its protection. Here we go.
Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. And so much for the gentle springtime weather. Another cold storm, more snow in the mountains, the skies so dark and gray. The wind, driven by the wild energy of the angry spirits, the wild energy of the winter storm. It was so cold this morning that I saw a rock climber just stuck to the side of a boulder, frozen solid. Happens a lot out here. I was sort of tired of wearing coats and sweaters every day, but I fished around the back of the closet and I found my old Irish fisherman's sweater, what they call a jumper for unknown reasons. Must be an old Celtic word. And that's when I remembered. It's nearly St. Patrick's Day. Actually, I remembered when I saw the pyramids of Guinness 12-packs at the grocery store, but I remembered all over again on this cold, gray, rainy morning. What we often do on this show is tell some strange tales that go with the season. The Saint's Day, dedicated to the Roman British evangelist Patrick, the so-called Apostle of Ireland, has become a sort of global binge drinking exercise that venerates such pagan Irish customs as leaving offerings for the she, which is spelled S-I-D-H-E, or I think in Scots English it's S-I-T-H, but it's pronounced she, like banshee. The supernatural creatures known as the good people or the good neighbors, because it's best not to say their real name. So it's kind of funny that such folklore is remembered on St. Patrick's Day, because St. Patrick supposedly cleansed Ireland of its pagan past, which is not true at all. Even the tales of Patrick's godly deeds are filled with whiskey and goblins. In the story of Patrick and the innkeeper, the evangelist stops at a traveler's inn and yells at the innkeeper for being a cheapskate. He convinces her that a demon lives in the pub cellar, but has grown fat on her lack of generosity and her generally dishonest business practices. She must repent and become a good innkeeper. Otherwise, well, I don't know. Maybe the demon finally gets so big that the whole joint explodes. The legend doesn't say. But Patrick comes around a while later, I guess he liked this pub, and he finds the innkeeper is now honest. But what is honesty in this case? Filling the whiskey glass right up to the brim, that's what. Patrick notes with approval that everybody at the bar has a cup overflowing with good whiskey. And so he visits the pub cellar with the innkeeper, where they found the demon is nearly starved to death. And then it vanishes in a flash of fire. As an Irish folklore website points out, this is where the phrase drowning the shamrock originates, meaning to have a big glass of whiskey on St. Patrick's Day. The tales of Ireland's many ghosts and goblins are the apparent result of the old gods, the Tuatha De Danann, becoming fairies, supernatural fairies, in the wake of the conversion to Roman monotheism some 1600 years ago. And while Ireland has in large part shaken off the shackles of all-powerful institutional Catholicism, since the days of the Celtic revival, the old language and the old pagan beliefs have been embraced and turned into tourist gold. Which is better than leprechaun gold because it doesn't turn into a handful of leaves when you come out of the trance. Now, there's something called Wilderness Ireland, a group, I guess, and it has a good description of where to find these supernatural creatures, these mysterious spirits that strongly affect human perception with the magic of fairy glamour. Entrances to the other world of the fairies are everywhere. Caves, tombs, barrows, forts, even tree hollows and roots. Lone hawthorn trees are often referred to as fairy trees. Some places inhabited by fairies are visible only to humans who have the gift, the second sight. Other places are visible just once every 7 years, such as the Green Isle, a fairy island said to sit off the Causeway Coast near Rathlin Island. We have something like that in the Mojave. It's called Lake Manly. You can only see it every 7 years or so in Death Valley. Let's go back to this Wilderness Ireland description. In early Christian times, the people of Ireland associated anything vaguely pagan as being related to the fairies. And in many people, the belief persists to this day. In fact, there are still some folk today who will claim to have seen fairies. Fairy forts are essentially the remains of Iron Age, early medieval ring forts, of which there are thousands still remaining in Ireland today. Farmers and landowners often plow and mow around them so as to not incur the wrath of the little people. They will also avoid disturbing Neolithic tombs, stone circles, and standing stones. all thought to be connected to the fairy world. In 1999, a new motorway was rerouted to save a fairy tree. Fear of fairy retribution has caused many projects to topple, protecting these heritage sites and monuments associated with the wee folk. Folklore has played a greater role in protecting these monuments and trees than the official government institutions, end quote. What Wilderness Ireland is saying here is that ancient sites and natural wonders have been protected more often by people who honor the sacred nature of such places than by the environmental agencies that did not appear in Ireland until the modern era. By which point, very little of Ireland's wilderness or native canopy of forest remained. And this is why you hear of people rewilding in Ireland and Scotland and Wales and in Cornwall. They have to. You have no choice when you let sheep turn your once forested lands into treeless, barren hillsides. From the Irish Times, a storyteller answers the old question, what do fairies look like? Some people have told me the fairies are just wee folk who seldom grew more than 3 feet tall but resembled ordinary human beings in every other way. Their clothing was old-fashioned and their features were plain, more ugly than handsome. Others have said that they look just like us and one could be standing beside you when you would not know. But there is a strange look in their eyes that gives them away. Some have said that they are beautiful beyond belief and when you see one, your life will never be the same. I have heard tell of them being terrible monsters and creatures from your wildest nightmares. Fairies are fallen angels that had nowhere to go, for they could neither enter heaven nor enter hell, and we can't see them at all. Some of the strangest tales of Irish fairies are those collected by a man who lived much of his life in the desert mountains just north of the Mexican border, specifically on a mountain called Tecate Peak. When this lifelong seeker, Walter Evans Wentz, was a student at the new Stanford University, he encountered William Butler Yeats, the great Irish poet. Yeats encouraged the young man to come to the Celtic lands and explore the rich folklore.
Desert Oracle Radio.
The result, after many years of work, was a book called The Fairy Faith in Celtic Countries, from which these next tales come. During 1846 through 1847, the potato crop in Ireland was a failure and very much suffering resulted. At the time, the country people in these parts attributed the famine to disturbed conditions in the fairy world. Old Thady Steed once told me about the conditions then prevailing? Sure. We could not be any other way. And I saw the good people, and hundreds besides me saw them too, fighting in the sky over Nachmaw and on towards Galway. And I heard many others say they saw the fighting also. Even today, certain things are due the fairies. For example, 2 years ago in the courtroom here in Tuam, a woman was on trial for watering down milk. And to the surprise of us all who were conducting the proceedings, and it can be added to the great amusement of the onlookers, she swore that she had only added the 3 fairy drops. A girl in this region died on her wedding night while dancing. Soon after her death, she appeared to her husband and said to him, "I'm not dead at all. But I am put away from you now for a time. It may be a long time or a short time, I cannot tell. But I am not badly off. If you want to get me back, you must stand at the gap near the house and catch me as I go by, for I live near there. And I see you, and you do not see me." Well, he was anxious enough to get her back, and he did not waste any time in getting to the gap. When he came to the place, a party of strangers was just coming out, and his wife soon appeared, as plain as could be. But he could not stir a hand or foot to save her. Then there was a scream, and she was gone. The man firmly believed this and would not marry again. Testimony from another witness. I saw the gentry on the strand at Lower Ross's Point about 40 years ago. It was afternoon. I first saw one of them like an officer pointing at me what seemed to be a sword. But when I got on the Greenlands, I saw a great company of gentry like soldiers in red, laughing and shouting. Their leader was a big man, and they were ordinary human size. As a result of this vision, I took to my bed and lay there for weeks. Apparitions from Fairyland. Some 20 or 30 years ago, on the borders of County Sligo, according to the firm belief of one of my own relatives, a sister of his was taken by the fairies on her wedding night, and she appeared to her mother afterwards as an apparition. She seemed to want to speak, but her mother, who was in bed at the time, was thoroughly frightened and turned her face to the wall. The mother is convinced that she saw this apparition of her daughter, and my relative thinks she might have saved her. A collective vision of spiritual beings. Some few weeks before Christmas, 19 and 10, at midnight on a very dark night, I and another young man were on horseback on our way home from Limerick, when we noticed a light about half a mile ahead. At first it seemed to be no more than a light in some house, but as we came nearer to it and it was passing out of our direct line of vision, we saw that it was moving to and fro, up and down, diminishing to a spark, then expanding into a yellow luminous flame. Before we came to Listowel, we noticed two lights about 100 yards to our right, resembling the one seen first. Suddenly, each of these lights expanded into the same sort of yellow luminous flame, about 6 feet high by 4 feet broad. In the midst of each flame, we saw a radiant being having human form. Presently, the lights moved toward one another and made contact, whereupon the two beings in them were seen to be walking side by side. The beings' bodies were formed of a pure, dazzling radiance, white like the radiance of the sun, much brighter than the yellow light or aura surrounding them. So dazzling was the radiance, like a halo round their heads, that we could not distinguish the faces of the beings, only the general shape of their bodies, though their heads were very clearly outlined, because this halo-like radiance was all around them. In our hurry to get home, we were not wise enough to stop and make further examination. But ever since that night, I have frequently seen, both in Ireland and in England, similar lights with spiritual beings within them. Some of the many haunting tales from the fairy faith and Celtic countries, one of the best folklore books ever written, you're listening to Desert Oracle Radio with Soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Dear friends, here's something you might want to write down if you enjoy Desert Oracle live events, especially our live campfire events. As we do from time to time, in late April of this year, 2024, we will be doing a couple of nights of secret campfire stories at secure outdoor locations. One location, actually. Just a 15-minute drive from the dreary traffic and crowded everywheres of the famous high desert in springtime. I will have the details next week on this program, and I will put them on the Patreon page first, patreon.com/Desert Oracle, which is what the entertainment industry calls early access. But don't worry, we'll tell you on the radio that same night. Don't worry. These will be ticketed events and intimate, as they say. happening at sundown on April 26 and 27, Saturday and Sunday evening. I'll also tell you about something we are doing down in San Diego County to remember the late, great Mojo Nixon, who passed away last month. Passed away at sea, that's no lie. And it will soon be time to announce something coming up at the end of July 20 and 24, over four magical evenings in the most beautiful place I know. The spectacular wildlands of the Eastern Sierra. The beginning of something I hope to be doing up there for many summers to come, amongst the Great Basin sagebrush and the stately pinyon pines. Amboy to Isaacs and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this has been Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from beautiful Antenna Hill between 29 Palms and that other one. What's it called? Jesus Tree, Dollar Tree, can't remember anymore. If you are in or around these parts, tune in at 10 p.m. Friday nights on your radio. You'll find us at Z107.7 FM, and they play what the lawyers call a classic episode at 10:30 p.m. too. That's a whole hour of DOR on the FM. Otherwise, just get it off the podcast player, which is a federal surveillance device called a cell phone. Make sure only official U.S. employees and their contractors and whoever they buy their data from is allowed to sift through your personal information. Thanks to the good bunch of people who subscribed to our Patreon page this year, patreon.com/Desert Oracle. You can join them for as little as $5 a month, and you'll get some early episodes and bonus live shows and other such material. And except for our closing theme by Pierre Langer, our friend Red Blue Black Silver made the soundscapes you hear along with whatever else was on this program tonight, and you can always find more of his work at Bandcamp until that gets shut down too or sold to TurboTax. Pretty soon we will just be broadcasting on the radio, nothing else, and everything else will be illegal, and hamburgers will cost $50. But we will still do the show somehow. Solar-powered pirate radio barge. Thank you for listening. Don't get blown away. And good night from the voice of the desert.
Is the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. Our second episode today is titled Bless Us, St. Minerva, and it was produced February 5th, 2020. Spring shows up earlier in the Mojave, as we will hear. And remember, 2020 was an election year.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. As much of the American desert enters Desert Spring. Now, if you're shivering up in Moab, you're probably thinking 10 degrees is hardly springtime. Relax. The lows should be back around the mid-20s shortly. Now down in Enza Borrego, it's already wildflower season. The days are just about perfect in Tucson. And up here in the high desert, the Mojave Wilderness, we have not yet put away our one coat. The one coat we all share for a few months sometimes when the winter cooperates. Now, we don't have groundhogs out here. What is a groundhog, anyway? Back where I'm from, they used to catch a nutria digging holes in the levee, and they'd wrap some Mardi Gras beads around the poor invasive species and prop it up for the TV reporter. They'd call this wretched, roly-poly South American rat the Cajun groundhog. They named it something like Curly or T-Boy or T-Jock or who knows, just an outrage against nature. If you've ever wondered why grown men in Cajun country are often called T-something, it's from petite. So if you come across a 300-pound, 7-foot-tall, middle-aged guy who works on outboard motors or whatever, and everybody's calling him T-Beb, well, that just means petite baby. And they will call him that until the day he dies. It's just the way of things. And they'll all sit around at the crawfish boil talking about how Pierre C. Thibodeau, the Cajun groundhog nutria, predicted another 100 years of humidity and mosquitoes. We should probably get something to predict the wildflower bloom. Or the number of tourists eaten by the yucca man each summer. Some kind of seasonal thing. But it's just wrong to put wildlife in a cage. We are not going to put a roadrunner in an aquarium or anything like that. It's legally and morally wrong. Maybe just watch the mourning doves. Watch for the first mourning doves ineptly making their nest up in the eaves. That's probably a pretty good sign that spring is on the way. Now, in Europe, they don't have Groundhog Day, I don't think. Maybe Hedgehog Day. Well, the 2nd of February is Candlemas. Candle and mass together. For all kinds of religious denominations in the British Isles, in Europe, and Russia, the idea is that you've finally taken down your Christmas tree on Candlemas Eve, and then you bring your household supply of candles down to the church, and you get your candles blessed. This is some sweet old pagan stuff. I wish I was in the habit of doing such a thing. Maybe I'll bless my kitchen drawer full of tea light candles next time before I light a couple for the evening. The first day of February is St. Bridget's Day, which is the first day of Celtic Spring. spring in Ireland and the British Isles in bulk. Spring in Northern Europe. Our weather here in the American desert is not a whole lot like the weather in Ireland, but we both have early springs. We are not digging our way out of the snowbank in early May like the Donner Party. One thing I love about St. Bridget is that she's about as much of a Christian saint as I am. Yes, there was maybe a magic nun called Bridget in the 5th century in Ireland. But there's not any pretending when it comes to St. Bridget. Everybody from Maureen O'Hara to the Pope knows Bridget is the Celtic goddess of the dawn, daughter of the Dagda, the goddess of healers, of poets, of the fire in the forge, the fire in the hearth, our goddess of inspiration, of the arts, of childbirth, of war. Her warriors are the brigands, highwaymen and bandits, like when you come on Captain Farrell and his money he was counting. You know what to do. Bridget is a Gaelic trinity all by herself, a triple goddess. Her sacred fire burns in Kildare, an eternal flame that never went out until some troubles back in the 15th century. The fire was alighted again in the early 1990s, and it has burned ever since. Her priestesses attend her eternal flame, and they attend to her sacred well, Bridget's well. Like Kali, Kali the mother, Kali the destroyer. Sometimes you'll see Bridget in the forest trampling demons, trampled underfoot. As a baby, a magic baby, like that baby Yoda, the druids brought her special gifts, things she needed. She could not eat regular food. It had to be magic food. So the druids brought her a magical cow. It was all white except for the ears, which were red. And she could consume the milk of this cow. The Christian version of Bridget made a Last Supper scene out of butter. Very crafty. Like the Buddhist monks up in the Himalayas who make religious figurines out of yak butter. Her holy place was marked by an ancient oak, Kildare. Church of the Oak. Before she was a Catholic saint, back when she was still all Celtic goddess, only women could tend her sacred flame, and that continued after her conversion to the new religion. If you were a man, you did not want to cross that hedgerow into Bridget's realm. They'd cut you to ribbons. I don't mean the ribbons always tied to the tree branches around her well, either. Those ribbons are offerings. Now, it turns out that I've sort of started my own religious practice regarding Minerva. Goddess of wisdom and owls and all that. Stuff we need. And as people have always done, I realize I've conflated Minerva with our real desert saint here in the Mojave, Minerva Hamilton Hoyt, the apostle of the cacti, as she was known in her time, the mother of Joshua Tree National Park, of Death Valley National Park, and Anza-Borrego Desert State Park, too. I guess I started calling her Minerva a couple of years ago. Apparently, I did it on the radio once or twice, too. Well, good. Let's make it official. Saint Minerva is the patron saint of desert travelers, desert campers, of those who seek the desert wilderness. Her sacred tree, obviously, is the Joshua tree. I'm lucky to share my little piece of desert with some grand old Joshua trees. And one of them is in the center of the backyard. And long ago, the previous occupants built a simple wooden boundary circling this tree out of railroad ties, six sides. And there's a little temple, or pagoda if you like, looking out on the big Joshua tree. And it all just makes sense. So I've begun to make little offerings to Saint Minerva at her holy Joshua tree outside the radio studio here. A pinch of whatever, a few drops of libation. And especially this time of year, with the birds getting chirpy about the spring weather coming, and the little bit of green you see on the desert ground for a little while, it is satisfying to have a little ritual to go with it. Now, a lot of people looking for some spiritual practice in their lives feel like they've got to go all out, got to really dive in deep. You don't really. You can, if you like, but you don't need to put on a headdress with a bunch of crystals, or go into a trance, or hop backwards over a burning log or anything, although you're welcome to do that if you like. But you can also be a regular traveler through life, who tosses a few coins in the fountain like we've done for thousands of years, a little offering to the well. Be thankful for your meals. Ask for a little help when you need it. Saint Minerva is the patron saint of getting cholla out of your dog's paws, or your paws. And she's the patron saint of protecting the desert wilderness, the desert wildlife, the flora and the fauna. Desert springs always get her attention. So make sure you are not trying to drain a desert aquifer of ancient waters so you can pipe it to Orange County to fill swimming pools. Make real sure you don't do anything dumb like that. Don't get on her bad side, you know what I mean? She's not just a flower child. You don't want to be like those heathen rednecks who busted into Devil's Hole a couple of years ago and killed some endangered pupfish and trashed the place. Those idiots went to prison. And eventually they're going to hell, if they're not already there. Hell, Hades, North Vegas, call it what you want. Call it the bad place. For a couple of years now, I've been knocking around the idea of putting together a little book about the lives of the desert saints, because we have a lot of them, people you need to know about, people who left their spirit in these places that we love so much. These places that fill us with purpose, with life. And I wish I was a triple goddess too, because then I could get more stuff done. One works on the radio show, one works on the Desert Oracle Field Guide, one works on all the other stuff. But it wasn't in the cards, I guess. One life at a time, please, as St. Edward wrote. That's Edward Abbey. So even though I've got an issue of Desert Oracle that's filled, editorially speaking, having a lot of good pieces written by interesting desert characters about interesting desert creatures and culture, I think I'm going to listen to St. Minerva and spend the next couple of weeks working on this little book on the lives of the desert saints, too. And maybe that's going to be the spring issue. And then we're going to be fairly quick with following that one with the issue that I've been fighting since September. Back in the Storm Area 51 days. Let me ask you something personal. Have you ever wanted to move to the desert and work on a pocket-sized field guide? You know how to read and write and all that stuff? Maybe drop me a line. Now, everybody wants to write for Desert Oracle. Everybody's got a story for Desert Oracle, they just need to type it up, but so far nobody wants to do the real work of the editing and the layout, and the artwork and the pictures, assembling the stuff so it's just right. Everybody wants to be a writer, nobody wants to read, and nobody wants to be the copy editor, and nobody wants to be managing editor of Desert Oracle, except for me. Except for you, maybe. Maybe it's you. You know, there's more to life than editing viral news articles that nobody will remember 2 minutes after glancing at them. You know that, right? There's more to life than your miserable job and your miserable health insurance and your miserable gym membership. Tear down those gyms and replace them with outdoor shrines to St. Minerva. With community gardens and sandboxes and sculpture and long tables for the breaking of bread and drinking of beer. You can get your exercise by walking to the shrine, working on the garden, pushing around wheelbarrows of rocks, feeding the hungry, feeding your soul. That would be a lot more fun, wouldn't it? Call on her if you need her, but if you call on her, you better be ready to do her bidding. There was a big smiling moon setting over the mountains to the west last week. The weather was fine before it got very cold. A few of the birds were getting a head start on getting busy. There were a few early insects, a bit confused. And we, the people, we are uneasy. If we're paying attention, we are uneasy. Bald eagles were almost extinct in the 1970s. You never saw them. But now, now, thanks to the EPA, thanks to the banning of DDT, the pesticide that made their eggs fall apart before the chicks were born. Now they have pretty much recovered. And now they haunt the landfills of the Pacific Northwest. They feast on garbage, and especially those biohazard bags of discarded human blood. I saw that the coal industry guy at the EPA is, surprisingly, leaving the EPA for the coal industry. He learned a lot of tricks in there. He learned where the files were, and he's going to pass on that knowledge. And the U.S. government made it legal to pollute and destroy wetlands and creeks in January. They made it easier to kill songbirds and other wildlife, too. Lots of things happening, lots going on. What are we doing about it? Well, some of us are doing a lot, some of us are doing what we can, and a lot of us are going to rock the vote or whatever, or try, which is good. You ought to vote, you ought to try, you ought to hope it counts. But what do you do when it doesn't? When the law break in, how you gonna go? Why let it get to that point? The point when the odds are stacked too high against you and everybody you like. Sometimes I'm standing at my computer, typing. I always stand. I want to stay aggravated about working at the computer. Or maybe I'm doing the bookkeeping or the other joyless garbage. Somebody's got to do it. And I think, boy, would I really give all this up? To do like Bobby Bear once sang, feel like old Pancho Villa, Sheila. That's why he sang Villa instead of Villa. What do you think? Bobby Bear doesn't know how to say Pancho Villa? I'm just talking about a little bit of American poetry called Pour Me Another Tequila, Sheila. Look up the life story of Minerva Hamilton Hoyt. If you haven't already, a lot of us up here in the high desert, I already know about her, but we can always learn a little bit more. My friend Deborah Netburn wrote a very nice article about the life of Minerva Hamilton Hoyt, mother of Joshua Tree National Monument, now Joshua Tree National Park. Look it up on the internet. It was in the Los Angeles Times. We've got a short piece about her in a back issue that I'm sad to say is all sold out. All the back issues are sold out except for some of the first issue, because I printed more of those, being an optimist, half the time. We closed out that last part of the show with another new track from our own Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Did you know he's got a music shop in Joshua Tree in the Sun Alley Shops? It's right behind Space Cowboy Books. an easy stumble from the saloon. From Amboy to Zizix and across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio. We broadcast from Joshua Tree on Friday nights, all across the high desert. And you can catch us on a few public and community stations in the western USA. And you can get our podcast through all the usual outlets, iTunes and Spotify and Stitcher and Pandora and Podbay and Player FM. Our next live event will be at the Ace Hotel and Swim Club in Palm Springs on March 12, Thursday at 7 p.m. outside around a real campfire. Free to attend, use the code Desert Oracle to get a discount on your room if you're staying at the Ace. And we'll do that again on Thursday, April the 2nd. We've got an events calendar on our website, desertoracle.com. Whether it's warm or cold, wherever you are tonight, I hope Saint Minerva will watch over you. Remember that her spirit lives in the Joshua trees, so do not climb the Joshua trees. Do not hang a hammock from the Joshua trees. Let's show some respect. The Joshua tree, our weird and beautiful yucca tree, indicator species of the Mojave High Desert. While you're up here, pick up the latest issue of our pocket-sized field guide to the mysterious American desert. And thank you for listening. And try to wash your hands now and then. It might help you not get the coronavirus. I'm your host, Ken Lane. Good night from the voice of the desert.
Our music today is from Arya Frankfurter's album, Celtic Harp, The Music of O'Carolan. The tune is Shebeg Agus Shamora, and I believe it's about fairy mounds. My thanks to Ken Lane for sharing his work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to you for listening today. You can call or text me at 406-404-6246 with anything you'd like to say, hear, or talk about. You can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgbm.org website. In a show coming up, I'm going to talk about some women I know of who I think also deserve our deep respect. Till then, stay well and sweet dreams.